Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Spicer from GameWisdom.com. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast, where we examine the art and science of games. We got another great cast for you this week. I believe this is our first cast with James on his new computer. How are you doing, James?
Yes, very good and loving this new computer. So it's, upgrades are necessary and lovely.
Yes. At some point, I hope I'll be able to do one here for my computer, but we shall see. We are, by the time you hear this, it will probably be sometime in mid-February, but we are recording this at the end of January. And for those of you who don't know, we have done a big update on the Patreon campaign. New goals, new rewards, with the aim to get more funding and add more content for everyone to enjoy. So if you haven't checked that out yet, be sure to go to patreon.com/GWBicer to get the updates and let me know what you think. We'll of course, do that a little shout at the end of the cast as well. But let's get to tonight's topic. We have a new guest on, and he's here to talk about his work in the game industry as well as his first commercial game that he's designing himself. So please welcome sound designer Jonas Turner.
Oh, hello, hello.
Hi, Jonas. It's great to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to do this.
Not a problem. We've been talking on Twitter for, well, by the time you guys are listening to this, for a few weeks, but it's always great to reach out and talk to new people, and that's certainly been a trend we've been doing here on the site thanks to more stuff on Twitter and social media. So it's definitely a pleasure to get you on, and I'm sure we're going to have a really great discussion tonight.
Yeah.
So to get the ball rolling, Jonas, since this is your first time on the cast, for people listening who may not have heard of you, could you talk a little bit about your background in the industry and some of the titles you've worked on?
Yeah, sure thing. So I work through Helsinki, Finland. I have a studio over here that I work through, and I do sound design and voice acting for games. Mm-hmm. You might have heard me on games such as Nuclear Throne by Blambeer, Badland 1 and 2 by Frogmind Games, Downwell by Mopin, and Broforce by Free Lives, Environmental Station Alpha by Hembuli. I worked on The Swapper by Facepalm Games, and I'm a bunch of games, Angry Birds and stuff like that.
Nice. I've played a lot of those games that you've mentioned. I really enjoyed Downwell, Broforce, and The Swapper. I think that was my favorite game of, I want to say 2014, but I keep saying time has no meaning for me in this industry after all the stuff I've done, so I don't even know when most games come out now.
Yeah. Yeah, The Swapper was a fun one. I didn't do the sound design on that game. Mm-hmm. Instead, I wrote the reverbs in the game, mm-hmm. and I also helped mix the game. So yeah, my work is mostly more ambient-y in that sense.
Cool. And you worked on Broforce. I had to ask, did you have any part in that awesome theme song that they came up with?
Oh my god, that theme song is amazing.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I wish I did.
I loved Broforce. That game was so beautifully ridiculous. And when I played it, I think I had just gotten off of playing some other like really serious and stress game. And when a friend of mine told me about that game and then I got a chance to play it, I was like, this is exactly what I needed at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, that was a fun project. Like, I mean, as you can hear me now, this is my normal voice, mm-hmm. and I'm the guy who screams, like, yells at you, like, Broforce!
Nice! Go.
That is awesome!
2-1, yeah. Yeah, it's like, a lot of people think I'm actually, like, the most American out there. And, like, people are like, this is the most American game ever made, and it's like, it's made by South Africans and a Finnish dude. So.
And a Finnish dude, that is awesome!
Just revealed it all to people listening.
Well, That does sound American. You know, we're always outsourcing. So, you know, that's the heart of America.
We should awesome. Get you like to record like some sound bites for the Slater channel in that voice.
Oh, my God. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Pop me an email.
Great wisdom. 3, 2, 1, go.
Yes. Oh. So, regarding your actual role as a sound designer, for people listening to this cast, especially those who are either like students or enthusiasts coming into the industry from that end, what does your role like entail when you work on any one of these games?
So yeah, a sound designer is pretty much the person who, well, as the name implies, designs the sounds around the game. So that means it's my responsibility to go through like footsteps, opening doors, explosions, mutants, aliens, and all that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And like menu sounds when you like go through a menu, goes blop, 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 doo-ding, like all that stuff. That's me.
Do you also do like anything with like the voice acting or the voices that go into the game?
Yeah, so that's for like some designers don't do that. But to me, I also do voice acting, so I do a lot of my own voice acts as well. So it's kind of easy like that. And I also do a lot of monster voice acting as well, not just humans. Yeah.
Cool. So with your role, like, I guess this is one of like my stupid questions, definitely more from the outside looking in. When you're working on a game, do the designers or the development team kind of like tell you, like in general, what kind of noises or sounds are looking for? Or do they kind of like leave it up to you to come up with it and then they will sort of give it like the thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It depends a lot on the project at hand. But yeah, quite often, like the most common thing on games that I jump into is like I have a client and they might kind of know what they want, and then we go through like we have like meetings where we go through like inspirations and just like examples of what they like and what they kind of want and expect, and then I'll kind of design around that. I'll do a few iterations like demos and stuff, then we'll try to kind of, you know, pick the style. And then when we are comfortable with the style, I usually take a few weeks off and I'll just write down like for instance, in Nuclear Throne by Vlambeer, they were like, yeah, we love like old B and C grade movies from the past and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I like this idea. And we were like going through some ideas. And then I took a few weeks just to write down like the world of the game. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing these notes, like, how do the guns sound like? Why they sound like this? What do the mutants sound like? And when I was in the part of what do the mutants sound like, I kind of got this inspiration to write a language for the mutants. Mm. So Nuclear Throne actually has a written and spoken language that's, you know, unique for the game, that the inhabitants of this wasteland talk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just a mixture of all kinds of different working styles, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
And here's another general question that I'm sure students or enthusiasts listening may want to know. When you're working on any one of the titles, Jonas, are you considered like an employee of that studio, or are you more of like a freelancer role for those specific games?
More like a freelancer role. Like I'm outsourced for the companies. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like I don't work at the company. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with Nuclear Throne, did you also have a hand in kind of like that? I'm not sure how I describe it. Like, so like that, like the music that gets played, like that song when you're starting the game kind of thing, like that very like energetic sound that you get.
Yeah. So the music, that's actually, especially Nuclear Throne, is kind of a fun thing. Yeah. And the composer, Yukio Kallio, is actually my next door neighbor.
Nice.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. That's kind of,
Was that on purpose, or did that just kind of work that way? Like,
it just worked that way.
Oh, wow. So you're like, hey, I'm working on this game. I'm working on this day. Where do you live? I live here. What?
I knew him before.
Okay.
Like, we've had our own, like, small bands and stuff. And,
All right.
And we've done, like, games together as, like, game jams. And, like, I remember when I moved here, I was like, wait a minute, don't you live next door to me? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, what?
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I've known him for like ages now, from like back from the time when I was like gigging with my ancient old band in like these small youth clubs or whatever. And that's where I met him, like, originally. Like, we're talking about, like, anime, comics, and games. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, man, you're cool. And then, like, you know, 10 years later, we're making this huge mutant game together.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago, Jonas, that you typically spend a few weeks working after you met with the developers to start coming up with, like, the initial sounds or your initial plan. For people listening to this cast, like, do you have like a rough estimate or a time of how long you typically work on a chosen game project, or does it vary based on the project?
Definitely varies based on the project. Like, for instance, Downwell. I made Downwell in, like, the sounds for Downwell in just a matter of months, like a few months, and it was done. But Nuclear Throne, that took like over 3 years. So it definitely varies on the project.
Yeah. I guess one other question I was just thinking about for you, Jonas. When we look at things from a game design point of view, typically games will evolve and change, obviously, over the course of its lifeline. We've never really seen a game go from start to finish and be, you know, perfectly the same. When it comes to, like, the sound design, what you work on, do you find that, like, when you finish, like, anything, whether it's a song or a soundbite or stuff like that, that is usually like set in place? Or do you sometimes have to go back over something, maybe change it or alter around depending upon what's been going on with the game?
Yeah, indeed. It's always an iterative process. Mm-hmm. Like, even when a game is released, it doesn't mean something's final. Mm-hmm. I think that's because I used to work in like I still do, like, work with, like, movies and musical albums and stuff. And with those, essentially when you release it, it's done. You pretty much don't touch it again until, you know, 20 years later when it's a classic. And but with video games, it's different. And for a lot of people, that's a weird mindset to, you know, maybe dig back into that project after, like, half a year. But that's with games, it's totally... you know, that might happen for various reasons. And yeah, I every now and then that kind of creeps up.
Now, I have I guess this would be somewhat of a tangent of a question, but before I get to that, James, do you have any questions for Jonas?
No. Actually, it's kind of went over a lot of the stuff in there. That's pretty cool. Definitely.
All right. Here's a question that I have for you, Jonas, and I'm not sure if you thought about this or not, but it's one that I guess kind of relates to sound design and that kind of work. As we've seen over the last few years, there has been some challenges regarding copyrights when it comes to licensed musics in video games. And we've seen cases where games had to have been altered or change because of that, Grand Theft Auto being a major example of that. As someone who's worked on sound design, and from your background, do you have any like input or opinions on sort of like that kind of challenge when you have to work on a game and like the music or the sound effects are like no longer, I guess, licensed to that developer?
Yeah, that's a huge... That's a huge, huge thing. And, I mean, I'm kind of surprised. Wow, that's a really, actually, good question. And, yeah, wow. And this is something that I mean, I guess I've learned from working with, you know, various movie stuff and so on that, like, old music, that licensing's actually a huge thing. Yeah. And I've noticed when I've worked with people, like, even some people who've done sounds for games for a while, haven't really realized, like, license, like, the power behind licensing, so to say. And, yeah, indeed, like, let's say, like, how I work is I usually license my sounds to a game. I rarely sell my sounds for a company.
Yeah.
Because that also kind of, let's say I would make a game with a lot of gun sounds and footsteps and clothes rustling and all that stuff. And I would sell that to company X. And then this company X decides, hey, now we own these.
Yeah.
Let's make a sound library out of these. What can I do to prevent that? It's out of my work immediately. Like, it's like direct relation to me kind of so-called cannibalizing my own work.
Yeah.
And so that's why I usually just license my sounds, or I license them to that company that they can use it in their projects or whatever, as long as it's not a sound library. But that said, sometimes when a company does want to own all the rights for something, that essentially means that I can't really use other people's sound libraries in that case. So let's say I would buy a library where there's explosion sounds. You know, someone's been recording like TNT exploding, tank shooting or whatnot. Something that I can't do myself easily. And I would use one of those libraries, and they usually have a license saying not for resale. Like, I can use them for a project, but I am not allowed to sell these sounds. And I've noticed that a lot of sound people actually do that when they have to sell rights. They don't realize that the sound libraries that they are using actually forbid them to sell those sounds onwards without a like separate agreement or something like that. And sometimes when I try to explain this to game companies or like clients or like be it movies or whatever, when I'm like, okay, if you want all the rights, it's going to cost this much more, because then I have to go and record tank shooting, TNT exploding, lions roaring. So, you know, it's there's so many things like that that not a lot of people think about.
I know we've certainly have had discussions about that here on the podcast. James, were you around for some of those discussions we've had regarding licensing and
licensing and stuff? Yeah, definitely. That's something that's come up from before, and it is a really big thing, because you are crossing you're crossing artists and their work with a company and its ability to utilize, sell, and distribute their work too. And that's always, you got to protect both sides. And I personally lean more on the side of the artist, considering the fact that you don't have an entire company backing you or, you know, have access to a bunch of lawyers. But especially also now that we're getting into the age of indie, where, you know, a lot of these companies don't really have like access to like super lawyers or stuff like that. So you're also kind of, you know, working, you know, they're kind of at that artist framework too. And, you know, you're both kind of inchingly try to protect yourselves to make sure no one gets screwed over, or at least doesn't get screwed over too much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, I guess one question for you, Jonas, and again, this I think will be another fascinating one for people listening. As you said a few seconds ago regarding licensing your work versus just like outright selling the rights to it to the specific game developer. When you're licensing your sounds to a game, what does that mean, I guess, in terms of them like working on this game for, who knows, months or even years? As we mentioned a few minutes ago, one of the disputes regarding like Grand Theft Auto was the fact that they only had the license to work on the game with those respective songs for, I'm not sure how many years, but it ran out. So when they decided to try and patch and update the game, those copyright IPs came back to bite them. So what does that mean like for you when you like when you typically license your sounds or the work that you've done? What does that entail, I guess, from the developer's side?
So that's the music industry. With their old time thinking. That's horrible. I feel for Rockstar right now. That's horrible. So yeah, with me licensing my sounds for a game, I consider it forever for that game. Like, to me, there's no time or they can make it to, you know, PC, Mac, Linux, whatever, PlayStation, whatever. It's for that game. That's I used to do a thing where I had like different platforms, but at some point I changed it because that at some point that stopped making really sense to me.
Yeah.
And instead I did a thing that if they want the sounds for different platforms and they need something specific to be done mm-hmm. on them, that would mean that, like, if I have to do extra work for those platforms, mm-hmm. then it would, of course, cost extra money for those platforms. But, you know, if it's just something that works automatically, I don't need to do any extra work, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they don't sell the sounds onwards, or if I sell the rights for a specific game, mm-hmm. and then they decide to make a sequel, mm-hmm. then I would say, like, it would be kind of fair for them to kind of pay for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, in a sense, work out of either my pocket or someone else's pocket.
Mm-hmm. And, like, when you say for, like, the future, that means that, like, if you do sound effects for one game and it's, you know, licensed to that title, if that developer decides in the future they're going to work on an entirely different game, mm-hmm. will they be able to use those sounds, or will they have to renegotiate with you at that point?
Renegotiate. I think that's how it goes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening, I know for some of you listening, this will either be really fascinating to listen to, or you may be falling asleep as we're talking about licensing and copyright laws. But it is a very important topic, and as you said a few minutes ago, Jonas, it's not something that a lot of developers may think about while they're trying to come up with their game, and while they're trying to, you know, build, design, program, and do all the art for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, the thing is, it's not only sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now there's going to be a lot of artists kind of crossing their fingers, because this is totally a thing with textures
mm-hmm.
and with code snippets that you have borrowed, like, you know, you use, like, other people's code.
Mm-hmm.
They might have these same things.
Yeah.
And it's super easy to find code.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we
have certainly seen a lot of indie developers do, like, those I forget, like, the actual term for, like, stuff like I Want to Be the Guy or I Want to Be the Gachi, and they use, like, the pixel art from all kinds of games, like, kind of, like, stitched together into one super game, almost.
Yeah. The amalgamation of everything nostalgia is, mm-hmm. you know, kind of become popular and stuff like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, but it's cool if it's, you know, just a freeware game, but if you're going to sell it, that's a whole new world of stuff. Yeah.
That's a whole new world of lawsuits, man.
Yes.
It is.
Oh, yes, and we could certainly go over onto that topic if we had time for today. I mean, that's an easy 40-minute, hour-long discussion regarding fair use and sort of the fan mod games that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's something I definitely learned as a sound designer, because, like, sound designers are, we are pretty much, like, the ultimate minority of games. It's us and server programmers. Like, how many server programmers can you name?
Yeah.
So, it's, like, I have to learn that stuff. I've learned most of my knowledge the hard way, you know? Mm-hmm. Someone taking my sound, selling them to another studio, and me being like, oh, wait. Damn it.
And again, these are things, like, for developers listening, that most likely you're not even considering this kind of stuff, but these are all those little details that come back to bite you if you're not properly prepared for it.
Yeah.
Now, I guess one other question regarding sound-related topics for you, Jonas, I just want to see if you have any input on. As we spoke about, like, late 2016, there have been more talks regarding voice actors and the voice actor strike that I think at this moment when we're recording is still going on. And
Yes, it is.
I was just wondering, do you have any thoughts or input on that from your side?
The thing is, I know it's been on for a long time now, mm-hmm. like a good few months, and it's kind of weird in a sense that how it works in America, I don't know, does it really work similarly here?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's true. It's more guild oriented.
Screen Actors Guild. I think that still falls under them for something like that.
It has more to do with that stuff and, you know, their, like, voice actors union and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
which we don't have in Finland.
Yeah, or in Europe, that makes sense.
Not that much, yeah. So it's like, it's definitely an, I mean, it's an American problem in that sense, but at the same time, what they're kind of going for is kind of universal, because it like depends, like, how do the big actors kind of get treated, kind of might reflect the smaller ones in the future, mm-hmm. and so on. But that said, I'm not really 100% sure what it is about. I think it was something to do with like salary and payment, that voice actors would get a percentage.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have to... I hope I'm not burning any bridges while saying this or stepping on toes, but how I see like being a voice actor in games, I'm like a plumber in that sense, where mm-hmm. I do my job, I get money for my like one-time job, and that's about it. Like if someone sells the house that I did the plumbing for, I'm not getting money out of that house.
Yeah.
And most certainly these games are not selling the games with the voice actors' names like movies do with actors, which they're, I think, referring to, if I understood right. I might be completely wrong here. But, mm-hmm. like, you know, like a voice actor isn't the size of Samuel L. Jackson, you know, selling a movie with Samuel L. Jackson being in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things they were kind of driving for, but I might be completely wrong here. Like, I haven't really paid attention to it.
Well, I mean, now I do agree that definitely you're not getting to the lengths of like Samuel L. Jackson, but I think even more so, especially in America, that voice actors are becoming a minor like B rank celebrities. I mean, you almost can't say Tara Strong without people knowing exactly who you're talking about, and at least a myriad of some of her work. And there's another one of the it's horrible to say. He did the voice of Samurai Jack. He's done like Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of his name right now. Phil Lamar, you know what I mean? And people like that who really have become staples. Now, I think honestly what you were talking about was more in the fact that they're not the main selling point to what they are working on. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like if Samuel Jackson does a movie, there is a percentage of money that movie is going to make sheerly because Samuel L. Jackson mm-hmm. is yep. in the movie. And yep. I will admit that I don't think I do not believe that voice actors have gotten to that point yet, especially
mm-hmm,
we haven't gotten to that point yet. And I mean, I think there's also a little bit of a tangent, but what's happening right now in gaming is we're starting to see more actual actors. That's highly rude, and I apologize. But more, we're seeing more film actors become part of video games and becoming more, you know, not just part of video games, but knowledgeable on the practice and understanding on, you know, becoming big marketing sell points. What was it? The something with Twin Souls,
mm-hmm.
something, I think it was called, where it had, oh my gosh, now I'm flirting on actors now. But it had two really big actors involved in the making of filming of that movie, or that game, and was an actual selling point of that game. Which Beyond Two Souls, that's what it was. Beyond Two Souls had Michael Keaton, House of Cards guy,
Kevin Spacey,
and I'm blanking on some of the names and stuff. Kevin Spacey and the chick from Inception.
I didn't see that, unfortunately.
I know who you mean, just can't remember the name.
But it had two really big had two really big names involved in the making of and selling of that game. So you know, I think as we move towards the new you know years to come and increasing in video game popularity, I think we might start seeing more. High rank names, mm-hmm. and with that comes the promise of that kind of pay that might bring.
Yeah. I mean, it would kind of make sense because, like, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson and so on and so on. I mean, using him as an example here. Mm-hmm. Nothing against him. And it's like people like that, they probably wouldn't be as big as they are if they wouldn't be, like, if they didn't have that celebrity status that, you know, they were in this movie, they were in that movie, and then press gets into it, and the whole Hollywood effect, everyone's kind of, you know, hyping them up. And if the same thing would happen in video games and voice actors, because, like, voice actors are pretty much the actors of the game, or just, like, an animation, and, like, if that started happening, where they would actually start selling, you know, a video game, let's say you have, like, video game fighter game 9 or something, and it has, like, featuring this and this person, you know, as voice actors for the characters. Mm-hmm. Like, if we kind of get that culture happening, then, like, definitely video game voice actors would be in the same position as, you know, Hollywood actors in movies. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that might be something that they're going for with the whole strike thing, but I haven't, again, paid attention to this. So, I mean, if they're going for something like that, I can see that being a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but as we currently stand, I also see it as, you know, if you are generic hero X, pretty much anyone can voice act it.
Yeah.
It's not such a big thing currently, I would say, in games. Mm. But I don't know. I might be wrong. Like,
And I mean, if we start talking about that, I mean, again, that's another podcast topic in and of itself. And it will be very interesting, I think, to see how the strike will impact the game industry going forward. For those you who haven't paid attention, the strike, I believe, affected any game in development or started development after, I think, was it like February 2015 or something like that? If either of you guys know?
February 2015.
So would
it's been going on for, it's almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
Or at least a year and a half, I should say.
So for a lot of the larger AAA development games who've been in work for like 2-3 years plus, they're not really seeing that impact. But as we go into 2017 with any new games being released or starting development, it will be curious to see how things will impact things going further. And we've been trying to get voice actors on the podcast, but I'm sure they're caught up in red tape right now. But James, I would love to have a cast just specifically dedicated to that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm, yeah, that would be cool. I would be more than excited to hear that.
Before we... move on then to our next topic. I'll turn things over to you again, James. Do you have any questions you'd like to ask Jonas?
Oh, I think maybe even for just some of the entertainers, are you in charge of the casting for the voice acting? Like, are you the one that's – obviously, you're working on it as well, but do you – like, do they defer to you as far as who they want – Or the casting end of a voice acting for a video game? Like, would you be responsible in finding people to do other voices?
Yes, pretty much. Like, so far it has been like 90% my call.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
And actually takes me to another question, because going back to what we said a few minutes ago regarding like the voice actor strike, we've certainly seen cases where the right voice for the right character can really bring that person to life. And I'm sure James and I could spend 20 minutes talking about all of our favorite voice actors in video games and animated series.
Mark Hamill, Joker. Done.
Okay. Well, that's easy. for you, Jonas, as we just said, like, were you like looking at like the various voice actors for like the games? Like, how do you decide, like, if a voice actor is right for this part versus saying maybe this person would be better with this character or maybe not even be right for this project at all?
Yeah, that's so, like, even though I've worked on a plenty of games, I still consider myself like a beginner in that sense, that even though I've worked on like games with multiple voice actors, it's been relatively easy for me. Like, usually I've just like got someone and I've been like, you know, do this and this line, and then they do it and I'm like, yeah, okay, this is done. So it's never been a huge process. I've had like, okay, I've had a few people that like came and did like a voice acting tryout, and you know, they just weren't up to the task. You know, like they just didn't have it in them to do voice acting. And you know, when I was like, okay, could you do like an angry voice, and they would just go like, oh, I am angry, and you're like, oh no, no, that's not angry, that's just you saying that you're angry.
That's you saying you're, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's understandable. Like, if someone asked me to, you know, race against Usain Bolt, I wouldn't, like, I don't know, I would just trip over. So,
well, not everybody's built, not everybody is for that. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's just kind of a knowledge of, you know, of yourself. As an actor myself, I've seen it. There's just some roles you're not meant to do, and some jobs you're not meant to do. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like for me, you will never be hearing me on any musicals or anything like that. There is no singing talent over here for me. So,
I heard you could carry a tune in a bucket. So if we get you a bucket, it should be our
or singing in the shower. Like, we can bring the shower on stage. I mean, current, maybe that will work.
Oh, actually, this is kind of, this is an odd what's it called? Oh no, my English, where are you?
Phrase
word now. Like a happening, like, you know, I was just thinking about this when I was working from the studio back home. I'm now at my home, and I was just, because I was doing a vocal session today. I was actually singing on my band's album today, doing vocal recordings. And I was just thinking that like a lot of people who actually try to sing, they try to sing too loud. That's what happened to me. I used to sing in metal bands for years. Nice. And then I tried doing this real singing, so like, you know, clean singing. And I realized I was just singing way too loud, and my pitch would go everywhere. And my voice would just be like, always on like the edge of being a voice. And then when I like started just, you know, singing in my vocal voice, I realized, wow, I can actually sing in pitch, and I can actually, you know, sing. So try to sing with a lower volume.
Well, folks, I think what that means is for the next podcast, I will sing all the lines, and I'm sure everyone will enjoy that. No one's ears will bleed or go into a state of shock from that.
I've already decided I'm going to be sick for that day, so
that'll be the new. My voice just went out. That's perfect. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, wow.
That's some good timing.
Yeah,
good thing I always have water nearby. But that will be the new Patreon reward. For $15, you can get a CD of me singing all your favorite hits for each month. I'm sure everyone will donate for that one.
Yeah, please do.
All right. I'm sure we can talk about so many more topics today, but I definitely want to touch on what you're currently working on. That is your first actual commercial game. So, for the people listening to this cast right now, what is the game that you are working on?
So, yeah. Wow. After working on so many games, I got to see like lots of great, great, great game designers and coders and artists at work. And I made my own games even before I did like sound stuff for video games. And after like working with JW from Lambeer, Ojiro with Downwell, and like the Free Lives guys and so on and so on, I was just like, man, I should probably do my own game someday. And it actually didn't really happen that immediately, or not really even, I didn't even actually even think about it. I made this jam game where I wanted to make a game for a controller. I'd never made a game for a controller. So I did that, you know, an Xbox 360 controller. And then I was like, okay, I'll make a top-down shooter. I was just playing like some Geometry Wars. And I was like, I'll make something, you know, arcade game where you collect points. And I was like, what the theme? This theme could be kind of demonic. And I was like, okay, sure. And drew some pentagrams. And then I got my good artist friend from England, Tuukka Stefansson. And he was like, yeah, I could jump in that game if you don't mind. I'm like, yeah, sure. And then he did like the original pixel art for me. And then I made this small top-down arcade shooter game. And then I took that with me to GDC 2015, I think. Yeah, GDC 2015. And we just played it at the park, like the park next door, Moscone Center. And then other people are playing it. They're like, oh, this is pretty sweet. I'm like, oh, wow, thanks. Mm-hmm. And then a few of my friends, namely Bo Blith, played the game as well. He made Samurai Gun and now Hyper Light Drifter. And he tried the game and he was like, oh, this is pretty sweet. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And I've always just adored his game design skills. And we were talking about like some game design things. It was all good. And then after GDC, when I went home, I was like, oh man, like so many people enjoyed this game. Maybe I should like continue working on it. And then I continued a bit. I added some notes that I got from people from the park. And then I went to the Broforce release party, which was in December 2015. And there was like, it was at the release party for Broforce. It was in Cape Town, South Africa, and I took my game with me. And we played the game at the release party, and I stayed over there for a few weeks. And like the Free Lives guys would play it with me and give me like notes of the game. And they were like, man, you should really release this game, like get a publisher or something, or like something like that. And I was like, oh wow, really? And I was like, I don't know. It's not really the time for me to do that stuff yet. And I don't know. It's not that good. And so on and so on and so on. And then but it actually stuck in my head until next GDC. I showed the game more and more people were interested in the game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And it was, you know, just like gaining kind of like traction from like friends and like friends of friends and so on and so on. And then at the spring of 2016, I actually asked Bo. I was like, I've been planning, I'm not sure. I kind of maybe want to make this a commercial game. And then he was like, oh, the game you showed me at the park? I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm in.
Oh, that's cool.
I was like, oh, shit. Like, I got the game designer I wanted in, like, the coder game. Like, I'm doing the game design, but he's, like, doing the coding and co-designing with me. And I'm like, oh, man, wow, this is crazy. And then I met my friend Vlad Miku in IGDA, and he told me that he was like, oh, have you heard of this new publisher called Raw Fury? And I was like, no, it doesn't ring a bell. And he's like, oh, they're releasing this game called Goner. And I'm like, oh, I know Goner. And I'm like, oh, wow, cool. And then he did an introduction, and then Raw Fury looked at the game. They were like, yeah, let's do this. So I was like, wow, like, okay, now it's happening. And I just decided to go all in. And yeah, so we signed the contracts on July 2016, and now the game is done. Cool. So,
wow. Yeah. And what? And I'm sorry. What is the name of the game for people listening to the cast?
So the game is called Tormentor X Punisher. Tormentor, and then an X, and then Punisher X, like the letter X. And that name, like people ask me, what is this name? What does it mean? And like, I have to be a bummer and say that I had a Skype chat with Tuka, my friend, and we were like laughing about old metal band names. Uh-huh. And I was naming the project, and I was like, I don't know. I'll just call it Tormentor X Punisher. And it's stuck ever since.
Oh, wow. what platforms is this for?
Oh, it's going to be on PC, Mac, and Linux. Hopefully. Okay. Hopefully Linux. That's like PC, Mac, sure. But, I mean, Linux is such another beast to get games running on. And hopefully consoles later. Like, if it does well on PC, Mac, and Linux, then definitely consoles.
Yeah.
And from the email we were talking about before the cast, this is a top-down shooter, right?
Yes. It's a top-down arcade shooter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really fast-paced and hectic. So the life expectancy, like, when you start the game, it's going to be, like, 15 seconds. And then if you're good at the game, like, it's going to be a few minutes tops.
Yeah. And the top-down genre has definitely been a popular one from the independent scene over the last decade. I've seen games like Crimson Land, of course, Geometry Wars, and I'm sure... Oh, and R.I.P. I think was one. And I'm sure there's probably, who knows, how many more of those out there.
Hotline Miami. Oh, yes. As well.
Yeah.
The top-down twin stick, which I enjoyed. I loved Hotline.
Yeah, that's a beautiful game.
And I'm to even go old school on you guys, I remember stuff like Smash TV from back in the day.
Smash TV, heck yeah. I played a lot of Smash TV.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That's like the biggest comparison I get. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, it's like Smash TV, but on like steroids or speed or something.
Hey, that's a good compliment though. There's a lot of fans of Smash TV and remember that from their youth. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. And it's funny because like if you think about it now, I don't think Smash TV would have gone anywhere today had it not been released in the time that it was. You know what I mean? It's one of those. Now I think it kind of would have fallen by the wayside of every other game that's a lot like Smash TV. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you know for that time that it came out, it was one of those. Well, we went Double Dragon. But a different scenario, you know. Like I think it was supposed to be a port game for Running Man. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was originally supposed to be was like a game for the movie Running Man.
Yeah, for those of you too, we probably have a lot of young people listening. That was a movie what was that? Was that late 80s?
Late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. Yeah, late 80s, early 90s.
Schwarzenegger before he became a politician. Error.
Type in Arnold Schwarzenegger into IMDb and you'll see
Richard
it in there
Dawson
somewhere.
Was good in that.
Richard Dawson was in that as well.
Oh man, we're getting nostalgic again here.
Yeah.
But I'm getting back to the top down twin stick shooter. One of the challenges of that game, as James just said a few seconds ago, is that it's very easy for your game to sort of be lumped into everyone else. And trying to come up with that unique mechanic or that unique marketing point can be tricky. So for you, Jonas, what is going to make your game stand out? Like, what are you hoping to get in there that's going to make it different from the other twin stick shooters?
So, yeah, I mean, the thing is what I'm doing with the game and what I'm actually kind of blessed by making this game is or like how I can actually make this game kind of happen relatively stress-free is this is not going to be, you know, my income and life doesn't depend on this game because I still do sound design and voice acting. That's my main thing. And it's just, you know, it's like a new branch for me pretty much. And yeah, so this game, I've had like the great luck to make a game that I actually want to make. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a lot of odd design choices. Like I'm trying to minimize like the usage of menus and like head over displays. And like, you know, I have no HUDs, no UI thingies around, you know, you just look at the screen and that's the game. And so the game starts in an empty arena.
Mm-hmm.
You have a character who has a gun that acts both as a machine gun and a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 10 bullets in your machine gun clip, and your last bullet is a fire bullet, which both indicates that you're out of ammo and you can do various interactions with the fighter. And you reload the machine gun by firing your shotgun mode.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reload pausing. I'm taking like I did a list of things that I hate in games myself, and I decided to make a game without these things. And one of them is reloading. I hate reloading in games. It's just game. You don't need. I mean, come on, like it's
like Doom.
It doesn't need to be realistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like that's what I liked about the new Doom. I was like, oh yes, you can just shoot, and like. I hate, you know, running and then you have to press, you know, a button to reload. It takes 5 seconds. And it's like, that 5 seconds would be used for something fun.
Mm-hmm.
What I did is you shoot a shotgun to reload your machine gun. But the machine gun shoots far and fast. The shotgun shoots like a short range burst, but the shotgun bullets interact with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you decide to shoot your whole machine gun clip, fire bullet sets the ground on like fire for X amount of time. And you can shoot with the shotgun through this fire to create a fire explosion. And you can do stuff like that in the game. And let's say you have an enemy with a shield. You can shoot the shotgun on the shield and those bullets will ricochet off the shield and you can use that to kind of trick enemies or like reach hard to like access hard to reach areas, which might be handy for some like boss fights or other enemies, or to create combos. Mm-hmm. So you can, you know, shoot, you can like exhaust a shield near a wall, and you can use that wall and the shield as a trap. Mm-hmm. So you shoot a shotgun bullet and just like starts ricocheting between the two. And when enemies run through that, you know, they just, you know, die in the trap.
Mm-hmm.
You can do like small tricks like that in the game.
Yeah.
So it's essentially like top-down action shooting with kind of like Tony Hawk like trick mechanics, a bit like Bulletstorm.
Bulletstorm, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. It sounds a lot like Bulletstorm, but in a top down scenario, which is going to be kind of cool. I like that.
And getting that kind of flow writing is going to be very important for these kinds of games, like Bulletstorm being a really good example. Even something like Hotline Miami and Hotline Miami 2, like you can really get into that state of concentration where you're just like killing enemies like left and right. Like there's no stop. And Doom being another really good example of like that kind of feedback.
The zone, you get to that bullet hell, like a bullet hell zone where a lot of speedrunners and speed players when they're playing bullet hell games like Binding of Isaac, which is one of the big popular one too, where they even say this, like when that stuff like that happens, they're in this, like they are part of the game, they are one with the game, they have connected to the Matrix.
That flow state is just really tricky to get, but when it works, it really pulls you in. Now, I guess my mechanic question for you, Jonas, you said that, of course, you're using the machine gun to reload the shotgun and vice versa. So can you switch between the two guns at will, or can you only use, like, the machine gun, and then when that's out, you have to use the shotgun, and when that's out, you go back to the machine gun kind of thing?
So how it works is you can use – I mean, it's only the machine gun that needs reloading.
Okay.
And you can use the shotgun whenever you want. You can only use the shotgun. You can use both, like, whenever. And if you're out of bullets with the machine gun, you can always use that button to smack enemies with your fists.
Cool.
The button never becomes, like, obsolete. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to minimize the usage of buttons.
Yeah.
So
we
only have, like, two interaction buttons, and other stuff is aiming and moving.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm trying to maximize the use of these buttons. And what was I supposed to say? Oh, yeah. And about getting in the flow or zone, so to say, when you perform tricks, this is how you also upgrade your weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you shoot enemies through the fire all the time with the shotgun. Yeah. That will actually start to upgrade your shotgun to eventually shoot fire bullets as well.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And
you
always stack. Like, all these upgrades stack. They are stackable. Yeah. Like, when you gain an upgrade, it never takes the previous upgrades away. It just adds to them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the end, you get electric bullets, fire bullets. You get bullets that come back to you as a boomerang and stuff like that. These are all, you know, just added on. So, in the end, like, if you get all the upgrades, in the end, when you press the shotgun button, you just, like, eliminate half the screen.
That's awesome.
And that sounds a lot like the Binding of Isaac and how they stack the different modifiers on top of each other.
Yeah.
And you get, like, split bomb explosion, homing tier.
Which somehow is also a laser beam. Like, you know, exactly. But I'm like, also, I always found it really interesting that, like, and I don't even know what to call this mechanic, but it's, and it's something that, Skyrim and all of those games have done where, something I love that if you get good at something or you like doing something, the game rewards you with that thing. Like he was saying that if you start killing enemies and they start getting electrified because you shot an electrical thing, you now get that. Like that has become part of, you know what I mean? Rewarding the player for doing something unique and different. You know what I mean? Where I almost feel like that's those points where it's almost like the developer is saying to the player, hey, you did something cool. You may not even realize that you did something cool, but here's your reward. I see that you're doing something cool. And you know what I mean? And it's something that some people wouldn't even think about, but that is such an interaction between the developer and the player where it's one of those, oh yeah, hey, I'm going to electrocute this guy. And the developer's like, yeah, I thought about that too. Here's some electric bullets. And you're like, oh, cool. That's so awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's nice to put. Yeah. And the thing is, I'm being nice to players, but I'm also being nice to the enemies. So the enemies actually try to outsmart you.
Okay.
So depending the ways that you play and you become better and better and better, mm-hmm. maybe the enemies start realizing that you're getting better, and maybe they realize realize that you're doing certain things, or, you know, when there's enemies that, let's say, shielders, they're like, mm-hmm. how can we mess this player up together?
Mm-hmm.
Enemies, actually, we have this AI system that tries to, you know, they try to learn you and they try to fool you into doing, like, things. Like, when you're overpowered and being like, you know, I'm going to destroy you all.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you see that one sneaky enemy behind you?
Okay.
So, yeah, the enemies kind of try to adapt to what you're doing in that sense. But, yeah, then another thing I mentioned earlier, that the arena, you start in an empty arena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the bosses, eventually bosses will spawn. So how I do the game is I have, like, a few different enemy types, and they spawn at different times, kind of teaching you the game mechanics one by one. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, bosses spawn. And these bosses, it's like a pool of, like, 7 or 8 bosses, and they spawn randomly. It's like one of these bosses will spawn. You never know which one.
Mm-hmm.
And each boss changes the level somehow. Mm. So let's say an example is this boss called Golem, which is this huge hulking beast. And he carries like this huge stone slab. And he throws that stone around. And when that stone hits the ceiling, the whole foundation shake and like chunks of ceiling drop down and create permanent walls there.
Mm-hmm.
So you start, bosses start creating rooms inside the game, and some other bosses might destroy these rooms. That's like their way of changing the level. Some bosses might, you know, leave behind like a poison lake or something like that.
Okay. So they are affecting the environment and causing you to have to know your ground as you're, you know, you might be all powerful, but the ground is still something that, you know, the bosses are going to have over you. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, it's an interaction between the bosses and the player,
mm-hmm.
like how the level changes. Like, you can manipulate the bosses to change the level in certain ways for your advantage, but it's also super dangerous for you
mm-hmm.
to keep them alive that long. And everything in the game is one hit death. The player, enemies, the bosses.
Whoa, so, okay.
You know, you might be overpowered, but so is everyone else.
okay.
Yeah, and the bosses, they have like different ways. They're like vulnerable in different ways. Like, let's say the big hulking boss I was talking about carrying a stone slab in front of him,
mm-hmm.
he might be invulnerable everywhere else. But what happens when he throws that, like, stone? Hmm. Maybe you can hit him from front, you know?
Okay, so that's almost taken from a game I actually just downloaded, have yet to play, but a game called Titan Souls. Where Titan Souls was a, you know, the one shot, one kill, mm-hmm. You know, for everything. Now, you're a squishy human, but if you find that one weak spot and get it, boss is done.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
You know, I wanted to call it like mini Dark Souls, but it very much is a game unto itself. So
yeah.
I love that you're taking a lot of these elements and I don't Ed from a lot of these other games and really working them into a completely a genre that is well known and loved by a lot of mm-hmm. video game fan bases. I'm really excited for it. So
And having the boss kind of influence the arena also adds that sense of like a procedural element to the game by the fact that the arena will be different each time you play it.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like how I think of it, it's like a arcade game with, I hate these days to use the term roguelike elements, but it kind of is in a sense, except you can affect. You have more control into affecting how things will change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's and not these just changes. Yeah. And these changes are only for one run. When you're dead, mm-hmm. it's all over again.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Only your high score remains and achievements.
Now, I guess one question for you, Jones. With a game like this, like a twin stick shooter, one challenge that we've seen, especially with something like Nuclear Throne, is giving the player reasons to come back and play it over and over again. Are you thinking about or have you come up with any ideas for replayability beyond just the high score?
So the high score is pretty much, like, how I see it is, I made the game so that it's a game where you start, when you start the game the first time, you're like, okay, what's happening? Oh, I died. Then you play it again, you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. Mm-hmm. I survived a little longer. And then, like, I introduce different elements, like the new enemies and stuff, one by one, mm-hmm. which kind of give you an, now I see kind of a thing. What happened? Then you get there again. Oh, right. Like, there's a lot of, like, discoverability in this small game. Mm-hmm. It's a small game, but it has a lot of depth. Mm-hmm. Like, when you start figuring out the upgrades, you're like, oh, right. If I shoot through fighter, this thing happens. And when that mm-hmm. happens, what happens if that happens 10 times? Oh, right. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like you find these small tricks, and then you learn to combine these tricks, and then the boss is spawning. You're like, oh, okay, there's a boss. I didn't know about this. Oh, now there's a wall. Okay. Like, I have these small discoveries that you mm-hmm. gain throughout the game. But in terms of, like, something more permanent, it's only the high scores. But mm-hmm. how we have the high score is, you know, we have the basic daily and your friends. Like, you have daily, like, global daily and global all-time high scores and friends daily and friends all-time. And whoever is in the top will have their name in a huge font telling everyone that, you know, you are the best in the world.
Come get, basically the come get me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have the ultimate bragging right if you're on the top.
Awesome.
Other than that, it's a small game. I don't really, like I mentioned, I just want to make something small.
That is perfectly, that's mm-hmm. perfectly acceptable. Not every game has to have that, oh my God, how much progression am I mm-hmm. making? And I think it's, you're starting to see this more too, where the education of getting better at the game is your reward for continuing the game. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. and that is perfectly acceptable. There's no reason, you know, it's, you know, now Dark Souls does have, I hate to keep referring to it, but Dark mm-hmm. Souls does have that, new game plus. But if you think about it, there's very little that you haven't, you know, you might get an enemy that's a little bit different, but you are getting better at the game. The weapons haven't changed in Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just you are now learning how to play the game even better. You know what I mean? The AI might become a little bit harder, but the AI is going to become harder whether or not you beat the game or not. Just the AI is going to get hard, you know? It's and you're starting, I think that's a really good progression for the gaming industry, where your reward might just be the knowledge of being better. You know what I mean? And that's kind of a return to the old school styles of arcade. And, you know, the arcade there was no replay. You know, the replay value of playing Street Fighter was that you got better at Street Fighter. You know, the replay value of Contra was that you got better at Contra. Like, you know, there wasn't I have to have this and it's going to stick with, you know, this is my reward and I get to carry this over. You know, no, you don't always need that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And like talking about actually like new game pluses and stuff. So like I mentioned, we have a bunch of depths in the game and lots of secrets.
Okay.
So like we have like alternate game modes that you have to find in the game.
Okay.
So yeah, we've taken like elements from games that we like, but we've kind of made them our own, and we've hidden a bunch of stuff in the game.
Nice. All right. I guess another question I have for you regarding the game, as we said, it's going to be more on the smaller side, and I agree with both of you about that. Like, not every game needs the 70-80 hours of content. And sometimes just getting that feedback loop, you know, like the 10-15 minute feedback loop perfect, can make all the difference in the world. We mentioned a few minutes ago with Doom, and Doom is a very simple game, but it's just very refined. Like, they know what they want out of that game, and I think they hit that mark almost flawlessly with it.
Yeah. Yeah, did you see the documentary about the making of?
No.
The making of the game.
Yeah, I definitely need to watch that at some point.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. Like, mm-hmm. for a long time, they didn't actually know what to do with the game. Like, for the longest time, they were just making an engine, pretty much. And then at some point, it just struck them. They were like, oh, now I know. And then in, like, the short... Like, I think that's how most good games are actually born. When you have that initial spark, and you are just like, oh, now I know. and then you start making it, and then like after half a year or a year, you have this like game that was just, you know, you're concentrated, like you're full on like dedication to make this idea alive, and that's usually when you get like the coolest games. And I think that's what happened to them. At one point they were like, oh, now I get it, and then just started making it, and that's what came out, and I think it was a pretty cool game.
It's kind of funny you say that. We actually had the chance to had Sandy Peterson on a cast, one of the guys that helped work on that game.
And it's kind of fun when we talk about that stuff, that as we said at the start, like no video game plan survives like first contact or first development. Like games will be iterated on, they will be changed. And it's kind of crazy to think like how some of these games, like you don't really know how it's going to turn out until, you know, at some point late in the development when all of a sudden things will start clicking together. And we've talked about this with previous developers and how it's like that last 10 to 15% is kind of like where the magic happens, when everything comes together and you start to see, okay, now we actually have something here. It's not just, you know, a bunch of systems all, you know, stitched together. We actually have a complete game here for people to play. All right. And again, I mean, we can certainly talk about who knows how many more topics here, but I figure, what is the time difference? And what are you, like 6-7 hours ahead of us?
Oh yeah, it's 11:20 p.m.
All right, I figure we'll start to wrap things up, so we're not keeping you until the morning your time, evening our time. But
yeah, it's, I mean, in a sense, it's fine because I work with two people who are on Tormentor X Punisher who actually live in L.A.
Nice.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, I have this twisted time zone thing happening right now where I'm working until like 2-3 a.m. and then I wake up at like 11. It's weird.
That's awesome. That's funny. We definitely got to have you back sometime.
Yeah,
man.
Definitely.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm excited.
All right, so I guess to wrap up the cast, I guess for me, I just have a few general questions for you regarding the game, Jonas, and then I'll turn things over to James. So I guess the first big question is, what time frame are you thinking about, or are you planning to get Tormentor X Punisher out?
Oh, wow, yeah. So we were actually supposed to get it out a bit earlier than expected. But then a platform that we were planning on doing it didn't really work out. And now it's going to be probably the end of March, start of April. And you know, we were planning on like end of March, but then we realized that Mass Effect is coming out then.
Oh, yeah.
So, do we really want to release the game at the same time?
Wow, it's kind of funny that you're having that kind of sense when I've seen AAA developers not realize that another game is going to blow them out of the water. Mm-hmm. So, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Good foresight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's not a good idea. But yeah, I'm going to be probably a bit after Mass Effect, I'd imagine.
All right. Yeah. And you mentioned that it will be available on Steam?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have an idea regarding the price, or is that still to be determined at this point?
It's not decided yet. There's a few issues we kind of have to go through with the pricing, but it's not going to be that expensive. That's all I can say.
All right.
It's going to be definitely affordable. Like, it's going to be like McDonald's affordable.
All right. I think that's it for me. Again, if we wanted to, we could probably spend a few more hours going back and talking about the sound design work. But for you, James, do you have any final questions for Jonas before we start to wrap things up?
No, actually, I think today it was a really good talk, and a lot of the questions I had were pretty much already answered. And now it was a real honor to talk with you, Jonas.
Oh, thanks. Likewise. Yeah, this was fun.
All right. Yeah, it was definitely a pleasure hanging out with you. And like James said, we definitely need to do this again, especially in record form. And hopefully, as we get closer to the release, we can certainly have you on for a live chat at some point.
Oh, definitely. And also, I'd love to have you on for like after the release, when the game's been out for a while, to talk about like how the game's actually going, mm-hmm. and how people are responding to it, and mm-hmm. how things have changed. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's definitely. Yeah, we definitely want to be there for that. So mm-hmm.
yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh, and if you're coming to PAX East, it's this March. Mm-hmm. If you're coming to PAX East, we are actually showing the game over there.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I think with that, we're going to wrap things up for now. So for those of you listening, thank you so much for tuning into this week's podcast. As always, if you'd like to support the site, there are several ways to do it. If you would like to submit a guest piece or be a future guest for one of our recordings or live shows, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. You can follow me on Twitter at GWBicer for updates throughout the day. Be sure to catch our nightly streams around 10 Eastern on Twitch, channel GWBicer. And last but certainly not least, be sure to check us out on YouTube. The Game Wisdom YouTube channel has been growing quite dramatically over the last few months. You can find daily plays of games, my vlog series, and more. As I mentioned at the start, be sure to check out our Patreon campaign under GWBicer for ways of supporting us that way. Our new goals are designed to get more content out for everyone to enjoy, and we have some new rewards as well. So again, Jonas, thank you so much for coming on. I wish you the best of luck with Tormentor, and like we've certainly said, definitely don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks. It was really fun, and yeah, thank you again. I'll gladly be on again.
Awesome. All right. James, thanks for coming on. I'm sure this was a lot of fun for you, especially talking to someone who works on sound design as an actor and an entertainer.
Yes, no, definitely. And if Jonas, you're looking for any more voice actors, I'm an actor myself, so definitely hit me up.
All right. And if you're looking for someone to do any singing, look me up as well.
Yeah.
All right. Before we come up with a we'll work on an ending theme that I'll sing for the podcast from now on. So that'll be the next project. Or the patron will be turn off the ending.
Yeah, how much money can we get to stop Josh from singing?
We'll probably hit like 10 goals that way. But that's going to do it for tonight. So again, thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week. And we will talk to you again next week, minus any vocals from me. But until then, have a great night, folks.